You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support.
Always recording, TC.
Great, that's so great. All right, okay, here we go. Maybe I should do this introduction as Nicolas Cage.
You're already doing it.
Yeah, why not? I'm already doing it. I'm in the zone here. Okay, here we go. There are two variables to account for when you decide to watch Arcadian. First, it's a Shudder film, and Shudder's good to bad ratio is not great. Secondly, it's a Nick Cage film. And say what you will about Mr. Cage, he never, ever phones it in.
Yeah, pretty good.
Not bad.
How do we feel? Okay, good. Thank you.
Can I do my impression of him in this movie?
Yeah, go ahead. Good. Yeah. Ooh, wow. Well, accurate. Accurate. All right, Kim, your turn. Go ahead. Knock it out. Let's show us your Nick Cage.
Well, I'm not on screen right now, so I am already doing it.
Hello everyone, welcome to the review for Arcadian. Arcadian is a survival action thriller set in a future world where some sort of event has occurred that has wiped out a large portion of humanity. What that event is not exactly clear. It's aliens, it's monsters, it's Jabberjaw werewolves, we don't know. Nick Cage plays a father of two sons, Paul and Joseph, who are teenagers. Acting like teenagers, let me tell you. And this family's trying to survive these ferocious creatures that attack their remote farmhouse every night, a la The Village meets Signs, maybe, something like that. The family finds themselves fighting to survive after one of the sons makes a mistake that opens them up for an attack. I'm TC DeWitt of the Screener Squad, and I am joined in the One of Us farmhouse bunker by two people I know are capable of surviving the end of the world. Kimberly.
What's up, guys?
And Melina. Melina, wake up. Melina, wake up.
Sorry.
Okay. Sorry.
So, no, I can barely survive Monday.
All right. So, yeah, I jumped on this because it's Nick Cage. I am a Nick Cage fan. I know he's a punchline, but I don't think that's fair because I do mean it. He never phones it in. This guy shows up and he gives it his all no matter what the movie is, whether it's it wasn't that Five Nights at Freddy knockoff. Or it's, you know, the massive weight of talent. Anything he does, he shows up. And so when I see that he's made a movie, I'm going to watch it because this dude, he's the best, even when he's in the worst. And I'm not saying this is good or bad, but I am curious about what you two think of this Quiet Place, Signs, End of the World indie flick.
Well, TC, I would love to comment on what you just said about him not phoning in his performances. Because really? This performance in this movie was 100% phoned in. He said, what, 10 lines? They were all mumbled. And a lot of his scenes, he was just looking upset into the distance. And then the rest of his scenes, he was asleep. I was like, what did you see that I didn't see? What?
You don't understand how hard it is to be a father to teenagers in the end of the world. I'm giving it my all here.
All right, I'll give you that. But my impression of the film was I really was excited about it going in. I don't have any strong feelings about Nicolas Cage one way or the other, but I know if he's on a movie, it's not going to be boring for what, either it's going to be good or it's going to be bad, but it won't be boring for sure. It opens up with him running down kind of like an alleyway with a huge backpack on. You can tell he's a little bit younger in the scene, and there's sirens blaring and bombs going off and shots in the background. I thought that scene was really well done because it actually made me like feel anxious and stressful for him. We don't even know anything about this character, but I'm just like, oh, this is a bad place to be in. I'm super concerned about him. The sound design alone really had me hooked from the first 2 minutes. And then after he stops running for a minute, we see what he had in his big backpack, which is his two baby sons. We never found out what happened to the mother, but I guess that's not important. She already gave the birth, so, you know, we're moving on.
She's done her job.
That's what the movie felt about her. I'm just saying it. But then we time jump 15 years in the future. The boys are teenagers. One of the sons is kind of more sciencey, quiet, a little bit angsty. He has a lot of drawings of machines, or I thought it was a machine at first, and later we found out it's not a machine, it's a cage. But either
traps.
Way, he
yeah.
traps, I guess. But either way, he's a little bit more inverted in himself.
Introverted, yeah.
Introverted.
Yeah. Introverted, that's the word I'm looking for. And then complete opposite, his brother is an extrovert. He's running everywhere. He's just, he's a track star. He's running from his farm to the next farm over, the Rose farm, that happens to have a very cute young woman about his same age. And he runs over to go sneak and see her pretty much every day. So we see right in the first, like, I'd say 10 minutes, all the three main characters, general characters, a father and the two sons, and their personalities. We see it really well. So because of that, because the movie did such a good job showing me kind of what the setup was, I was interested.
Yeah, I jumped on this for the exact same reason as UTC. I love Nicolas Cage. I love him when he is ridiculous. I love him when he's subtle. The results of that vary. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in the past few years, I thought that he has just had such a great output. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, you've got Pig, and this last year we had Dream Scenario, all of which I thought were excellent, and he was giving career best performances in all of them. So between that and hearing actually pretty good advanced word of mouth, I believe this premiered at South by Southwest. I was so excited for this, and I had nothing but good expectations, which I suppose may be why I spent a good 10 minutes thinking, wow, this is a great slow burn. I like what they're doing with the camera. I can't wait to see where this goes. And I spent the rest of the movie wondering when the hell it was going to start.
It's about the 40-minute mark where the movie really pays off its setting. This is a very, very small film. There's a very small cast. There's very few locations. It's got a good look to it. I wasn't quite a fan of the handheld camera work. It was very clearly from a very nerdy production side of things. It was handheld, not a gimbal. And that makes a subtle difference to how you view something. Essentially, you're going to get more motion sickness from this because it's so jittery. Mm-hmm. So just back up when you watch it. But it takes about 40 minutes of setting it up and giving us a couple of like great moments. When it truly starts paying off its potential, there's this very Shyamalan-esque, quiet moment where you actually get to see one of these things for the first time, and just an appendage of one of these things for the first time. I'm like, okay, here we go. All right. Because up to that point, it did establish the characters nicely. It did establish the world nicely, but it was really starting to take its time going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And Kim, you had messaged me while you're watching it. This had a short film, indie film vibe to it. The look of it. I don't know if you meant the tone as well, but I felt that. I was like, this is some great low budget indie filmmaking, really utilizing all their tools appropriately. But I wanted it to start getting somewhere. And yeah, then there's a nice, tense, exciting scene of, I'll just say, an appendage that's like, okay, yeah, what are you going to do with it? Okay. And the payoffs of the premise and the setting and these characters starts picking up a little by little from that point on. So it is a bit of a slow start, but once it really starts rolling, I'm like, yes. And then it slows down again. And I'm like, God damn it. So I did feel an uneven pace to this movie.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. I kind of think that this film could have either been shortened to an actual short film and it would have been perfect, because the story they told wasn't anything extremely complex that couldn't have been told in probably 15, 20 minutes. But because they chose to make it a full-length movie, I think they either needed like an extra 15 minutes or it could have been a 15-minute film. Something about it just felt really like it wasn't giving quite enough to be a full-length film for me. So I don't know if you guys felt similar to that. Something around the world building felt a little lackluster because it, you know, like TC said, it was only basically two locations of the Nicolas Cage farm and the Rose farm where the cute girl was. And the world just felt too small to me. And I think there could have been some more, either maybe like one like quick flashback to Nicolas Cage when the boys were maybe like 5 or 6 years old. And we got to build a little bit more of his father character with them and showing the love that he has and what he had to do in order to find this farm, to find this semi-safe place for them. There was just something like that I needed in order to really buy into this world.
You, I think, just nailed what I think the ultimate problem with this movie was for me. And TC, you brought up Signs and A Quiet Place, which are two movies that I personally love. And what they have that this movie, I think, is sorely lacking is a sense of who these characters are as individuals and what their relationships are to each other.
Boom. There it is.
That was something that, say what you will about, you know, those movies with, in terms of logic issues and perceived plot holes, you have a sense of who these people are. You have a sense of what their relationships are, or lack thereof in a lot of ways. You watch those movies and you're like, wow, you're seeing a broken family, and there's so much riding on you hoping that they can find a way to put their differences aside and come together, because that's the only way that they're going to survive this situation. Here, it's like we get maybe one, like we get a look at one day in the life of this man and his two sons, and then once the crisis happens that kind of sets everything going, it's all built on the notion of, well, the two brothers don't get along, but we're never exactly shown why that is. It's kind of like the script just says, well, because. And as a result, there's just not enough for me to be rooting for them to get through this situation, because I just don't have a sense of who they are, what's driving mm-hmm. them. And never was there a moment where I'm like, oh God, I really hope that the two of them come together, because I really am hoping this relationship improves.
Going off of what both of you are saying, it is shallow in a way. It's a sketch of characters here. It has almost a video game level of depth. It's not fair to a lot of video games, but where the audience is almost expected to project onto these characters. I know some people find it unfair to compare movies to each other, but I want to go to a movie like 28 Days Later, where you have a group of four traveling in an apocalyptic wasteland. There's a constant tension amongst these characters in the world they're trying to survive in, as well as we are developing a relationship with them as they develop relationships with each other. And strengthening who they are as individuals and what they mean to each other, building that up allows the audience to go, dear God, please let these people survive. I'm so scared for them. A Quiet Place does that really well. The Village, Signs, just drawing from some other films that have the Venn diagram overlap. Even Knock at the Cabin, which came out a year or so ago, which is a Shyamalan movie, which is very insular, which is end of the world, which has four characters that we get to know over time. This movie has the elements in place to go there, and it doesn't go far enough. Because I don't know these characters well enough. I don't know what they mean to each other enough, other than, well, dad, save two sons, sons don't like each other. That's not enough to really invest myself emotionally into these characters, and therefore I'm just watching the plot of this movie unfold, and it feels less interesting in that regard.
Yeah, I think this movie could have done itself some favors if they had just shifted the focus a little bit. And what I mean is shifting the focus on the cast. So the movie is advertised as a movie about a father and two sons, but really I feel like the movie wants to be about the son, Thomas, who's the more like rebellious, adventurous mm-hmm. son, and his little like almost girlfriend, Charlotte, on the Rose Farm. I think if the movie had shifted to those two being the main characters, and then we saw bits and pieces of their family drama, that could have been a more interesting film set in this world to me. And it already has the building blocks of it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like the movie was real. Every time those two characters were together, I felt their chemistry. I felt their kind of longing for each other, and I was more invested in their survival. I really could give two, you know what, if Nick Cage or the other brother survived, because they never were that endearing to me. They never had any dimension to me as characters. I thought they would. My first impression was, oh, this movie knows how to build a character. they had the first couple steps, but then they stopped after the first 20 minutes and we were just watching them go through the motions of the movie. But when it came to Thomas and Charlotte, I was like, okay, there's something here. There's something I could really care about with them. And I wish the movie had focused more on that.
Yeah, I agree. And yet I feel the exact opposite, to where I felt the exact same thing, where the movie felt fractured. It felt like it split off on two tangents. One regarding the relationship between the two brothers and their dad, primarily the relationship between the two brothers alone, and the relationship between Thomas and Charlotte. It felt like it needed to pick a lane and stick with it, whereas you actually were more invested in the relationship between Charlotte and Thomas. Every time they went to that, I was just kind of mentally checking my watch. I'm like, okay, can we just get back to actually building the relationship between Nicolas Cage and his two sons? I feel like that's what we were promised. It felt like that's what this was supposed to be built on. This feels like a distraction every time they go to it, and it's taking away from where the focus should be. Every time they had a scene between the two brothers where they're fighting, they're disagreeing just from such an insular level, I was like, I like this. I want more of this. But every time they would do it, they would just end up kind of pushing that to the side and going off and doing something else.
I think it's funny because it sounds like you were more interested in watching a dramatic movie and I was interested in watching a romance movie. So that's where we differ. And the movie ended up not satisfying either of us.
And I came here for a Nick Cage movie and I didn't get that. He's literally sleeping through half of it. This is bullshit.
It really was.
The potential for a better movie was here. I do like what's here. I do think that this is a pretty good movie, especially for an indie film. It's more of these two young actors who don't have as many credentials or credits as Nick Cage does on screen most of the time, and they're doing a nice job. I think there's a couple of actory moments where the dialogue is coming out a little stilted. It kind of verges into that more primetime, soapy, CW-style acting, and a couple of moments of drama. But in general, there was potential here. I liked what they did when they got it right, and I just wish those moments had been stitched together a little better with some stronger character developments. And they didn't even have to add characters. They had more characters here to explore with, like on the Rose Farm. And I don't even mind that this didn't explain the rules of the world, per se. And I also liked how insane these monsters are. Like, they are bug... If anyone's ever read The Langoliers by Stephen King, they are these, like, weird, shapey, gooey, Lovecraftian nightmare things that I kind of dug. I dug the design of them because the design was like, wow! What a cockroach, spider, human, bear, wolf thing. Like, kudos to them for an original weird-ass design on their monsters.
Yeah, they threw all of those into the fly machine.
That's good.
At first, I thought it was going to be a cockroach monster because I kept focusing on cockroaches. But the monster itself, the way it moved, not necessarily how it looked, but the way it moved reminded me a lot of that movie Attack the Block.
Yes!
Far superior movie. But the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, man, I need to watch Attack the Block after this.
Hell yeah.
Right? <It'd be> good.
You should. Great movie. I highly recommend. But actually, why don't we get into final recommendations on Arcadian here and put a score on it. Kim, go ahead.
So yeah, as I kind of mentioned before, this movie set me up to be really invested in it from the first couple, like 20, 30 minutes. And then I kept waiting and waiting and waiting to actually be invested, and it never happened, or for something to move the plot forward. But it was taking such its sweet time that it lost me. It lost me after like the 60-minute point. After 60 minutes, I was checking my watch. And then I think in the last 15 minutes, then they were like, boom, bang, we're gonna have this huge, like, two action set pieces, and we're just going to set fire to things and blow things up. And I was just like, this came out of nowhere. It felt very much like that last episode of Game of Thrones where Daenerys went crazy, and it's just like, whoa, there was no build up to this. We didn't see that the monsters were plotting what they were plotting before it happened. I wish we had gotten a couple little hints And then there were also some plots that I felt were dropped throughout the way, especially with the brother Joseph, who was the more smart introverted one. He made an effort in the middle of the film to try and study the monsters to find a way to beat them. And that never really came back up towards the end. I was really hoping that would come up and he would have his moment to save the day, but it never comes back up. And then kind of the same thing with Nicolas Cage's character. As we've mentioned, he fell asleep. And when he woke up, his actions in that time were very confusing to me. And I was just like, you might as well have stayed asleep. I really cannot give this movie more than 4 out of 10 knee replacements that I would need to run between houses in the apocalypse.
Melina.
I absolutely agree with you. You took the words right out of my mouth. I think that this is a movie that has so much setup and almost nothing in the way of payoff. TC, you said that you felt like it kind of got the ball rolling at the 40-minute mark. I would say that it felt more like throwing a boomerang where it's like, oh, well, oh, here it goes, but then it just comes right back.
Yeah,
and you don't really get... You're right. It's like there really is not a single character setup or plot development that feels like it reaches its point of completion. There was actually a moment where I was watching this and I thought back to this writing exercise that I used to do in my creative writing class. You would have to start a story and then pass it off for someone else to finish, and that's what this felt like to me. I was like, wow, you went in a direction that felt like it just completely abandoned what this felt like it was leading toward. I spent so much of that second half especially kind of laughing at it, and occasionally I would wake up a little bit, not for the reasons I felt like they wanted me to. I was just like, okay, well, I'm laughing at this more than I'm thrilled by it. And for, I think, the last 15 minutes, I was just flat out Mystery Science Theatering through the entire thing. I was just like, I'm just making jokes at this point because I can't wait for this to wrap up. There was one great scare, and that was when I was convinced that the credits were going to start rolling. And it turned out that the screener that got sent to me had this runtime listed at 2 hours and 31 minutes. And a moment, I was absolutely terrified. I was like, oh, dear God, there's another hour left. There was not.
I terrified you, didn't I?
They did get me there. But yeah, if that is the only way that you can get my heart pumping in a horror movie, especially one of this nature, one that mirrors so many that I do love. I love claustrophobic creature features, even the ones that some people hate. Looking at you, Signs and Bird Box. I'll always be your friend. But yeah, this ultimately just kind of came and went. I had more fun talking with you off mic about it than I did actually going through the experience. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 10 reasons you don't bring stray animals into the house.
I'm going to give this some indie film love. It is a small film. It is a small crew, a small cast. And what they pulled off with what they had, kudos to them. Because it does have a lot going for it when you look at it from an indie film lens. So awesome stuff there. And I do think Nick Cage, even in his quiet subtlety in this, I don't think he was phoning it in. I think he was making some nice nuanced choices, as hard as they might be to see within this very sleepy role, we'll call it. And also, the monsters in this were a lot of fun. They really did have a Stephen King Dark Tower-esque vibe to them. So when they start showing up more and more as the movie goes along, I'm like, yeah, more of this weird shit. If it had gotten a bit deeper into the relationships with dialogue scenes, showing us what these characters hoped and dreamed and wanted, that would have helped this a lot. Because it's just very shallow in a lot of ways. This very well could have been a final episode of a 4 or 5 part BBC series, and we didn't know it because that's what it felt like. It's like, did I miss 4 episodes before I decided to watch this? That's sort of how it felt for me. If you're into small end-of-the-world survival films, this will be all right for you, but you'll likely find yourself getting a bit ADD and checking your phone. Or if you're watching it with someone, you are going to start riff tracking through it. And hey, you know what? That's fun too. But end of the day here, I wish I could have loved it more, but I'm going to give it a 2 out of 5 home haircuts.
Oh God, you noticed that too, huh?
Yeah. All right, so final thought here as we exit this the bunker, the farmhouse bunker here if you could survive the end of the world with a Nick Cage character, which Nick Cage character do you want to survive the end of the world with?
Ghost Rider. Dibs.
It's not Ghost Rider. Okay.